Welcome to episode number 2 of The Hello Show, featuring David Kendall.
Hello.
And me, Dave Lawrence, welcoming you to the second edition of our both of our first podcast. We tried out our first episode last week. It went really well. So, David, I think we had so much fun, we just decided to do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think there's three goals I have going forward from here. Fewer awkward pauses.
Right.
Because last week we paused quite a bit, and I want to avoid that. Admittedly, I could have edited most of the pauses from the podcast, but since it was like 3 a.m. when I did the final cut, I was in no mood to mess around with that all over again, so...
Right, and we want to give people an authentic look into our voices and personality.
Exactly, yes.
Yes, no editing.
Yeah, well, I did do a bit of editing. last week, I should apologize to our listeners who wanted to know what my favorite database system was used. It appears that what happened was that just as I was about to say the word MySQL, Audacity in the background beach balled and stopped recording for a fraction of a second, so it jumped ahead to after I'd said the word MySQL. So my favorite database software is, in fact, MySQL.
Hmm. Maybe Audacity didn't like your response.
Exactly, yeah.
That's too bad.
Prefer SQLite.
Right.
The second goal, clearer diction. I had not realized how much of a problem this was going to be. I sit about a few feet from my computer microphone, and I'm in a very damp acoustic, and... my accent doesn't really help, because up here in the north of England we don't tend to pronounce our consonants very strongly. So that's an aim for me. Dave, I think you were pretty okay on that, but you have a better microphone than me, because you have a newer Mac.
Right, and a Midwestern accent, which I guess is the standard. Like, they make newscasters speak in a Midwestern accent, because ours is the most neutral.
Right, yeah, like... for our British listeners, received pronunciation, the very home counties accent with which newscasters speak. If you watch 2001 A Space Odyssey, where Kenneth Kendall is conducting the interview with the astronauts on board Discovery 1, this is the accent that he speaks in.
Huh, very vanilla, very plain.
Exactly. And the last, my last goal is to be slightly more coherent in what I say. I'm not the best storyteller. I tend to miss details out and doesn't exactly make sense. So this week I actually have some notes about what I want to talk about in detail.
Oh, well, that's great. Good. Well, I understood you perfectly well, but then I'm pretty abnormal, so...
This week I think we need to talk about the iPad.
Yeah. Oh, what's that? What do you speak of?
It's the Newton killer.
Oh, touche. I actually had someone on Twitter ask me if the iPad was going to replace my Newton. And I had to give them the bad news that actually my iPhone has already done that. I mainly use my Newton for little projects and some fun writing and on-the-go stuff. But my day-to-day management is done on my iPhone now.
Right, yes. I mean, the main issue for me with the iPad that isn't an issue on the Newton or on just an ordinary laptop is text entry. Because I am... I can't stand mushy keyboards. Like, right now I have this Apple aluminium keyboard.
Mm. And there's definitely no mushiness on the new one, huh?
No. I mean, that was a common complaint on the ones after, right after Jobs came back with the Pro keyboard and the USB one.
Right.
And it was just so mushy compared to the old ADB ones that were before.
Right. Well, you want to talk about mushy? Try an iBook keyboard sometime. Those are pretty mushy.
Even the G4, even the later ones.
Yes, especially that one. In fact, ooh. I had a backspace key that gave me a lot of problems because of that.
You see, that's part of what I want to talk about today, which is I was thinking of getting an iBook G4, but now that the iPad has come out, I'm kind of thinking maybe I should go for that instead.
So the iBook G4, is it a cost issue, or why that particular model?
The iBook G4, you mean?
Yeah.
I'd really like something that's a bit more powerful than my iMac. Ideally something that can run Leopard, because there's so much software that's gradually dropping support for Tiger now.
Right. Yeah, like I said last week, it's still a very capable machine. I could use mine every day and be just fine.
But the main issue for me is, as I said, getting back to it, text entry. Because the software keyboard on the iPhone is okay. I'm not sure what it will be scaled up on the iPad, but it's less than full size.
So do you prefer one of those physical keyboards on cell phones and whatnot?
No, I actually quite like the iPhone keyboard.
Okay.
But they do the keyboard dock as well. I was thinking about maybe getting one of those to go with it. Now, the issue is that if I did get myself an iPad, then I would get myself a 3G one, and then I'd just get rid of my iPhone altogether.
Wow, really?
Yeah, because I the main thing I use my iPhone for is the internet. That's in like probably 4 or 5 texts a month, less than a quarter of an hour on the phone, so...
Right. So you would just switch back to one of those plain, free-with-plan kind of phones?
Yeah, I'd go back to my... what was the phone that Nokia made that was the first one to have Snake on it?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Alright, yeah. But that was what I had before I had the iPhone, so that was a huge leap for me.
Right.
Wow, it does all this stuff!
Yeah, I had a little Samsung model that was a flip phone. Like, you opened it up like a clamshell. And it had a web browser on it, but it was, like, plain text and very slow, and it was awful.
Right, yeah. Because that's one of the things that the iPhone did really well, was the web browsing. Because it was one of the things that Jobs picked out in his keynote introducing it, that it was... They didn't just go to the watered-down, stupid versions of websites.
And then I think that's a good word for it, stupid versions of websites.
Yeah. It was just the actual website, and there was all these Zoom things you could do, and it's worked really well. But I would rather have a proper, you know, what is it, 1024x768 on the iPad?
Yeah.
I'd rather have that, and then not have to Zoom. Or maybe you do have to Zoom, because the pixels per inch is 130, I think.
Right.
Because that's pretty high. Normally they're about 100 on most displays.
Right. So you were pretty happy with the announcement then. Happy enough that you want to get one.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably not have got one if it was just the media tablet that everyone was predicting. But since it's basically the iPhone scaled up, which is what I thought it wouldn't be,
right?
I think I'll probably get one.
Now they haven't detailed any UK data plans, have they yet?
Not yet. They haven't even announced the pricing. But I'm guessing if you work out $4.99 in the currency converter, it comes to just over £200, I think.
Okay.
Or maybe, is that, that's probably wrong. Or maybe over £300. But, so I'm expecting either it to cost £2.99 over here or £3.99 over here.
And unlike an iBook, you would have constant data connection.
Yeah, that's a thing for me.
Yeah.
But the problem with the iPad is... For me, no printing. Flash isn't an issue for me. You know, the whole web is moving to the HTML5 gradually. All Apple's doing is, like, putting the accelerator on.
You don't think it'll have printing capabilities?
Well, they've not said anything about it. I mean,
okay.
I can't think of how they would do it. There's no USB port. There's Although they could do it over the Wi-Fi. That's what I'm hoping.
Right. Yeah, Wi-Fi printers. There you go.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's the thing with me. Like, it's so hard to judge whether or not I'm going to buy this thing, because I just have this feeling that when it's actually released, that there's going to be a whole bunch of new stuff that they've worked out. You know, the little details like printing and...
Yeah.
I just feel like there's going to be, you know, iPhone OS version 4.0 by the time this thing comes out, so that
all these questions
are going to be answered.
Yeah. With the iPhone OS thing, that's kind of weird, because the iPad runs iPhone OS 3.2.
Hmm.
Apparently, iPhones and iPod touches can't run that particular version right now.
But maybe they will be.
Maybe, but it kind of makes me wonder what they're going to do about that, because are they going to kind of do a synchronized versions thing or an alternate versions thing where 3.1 would represent an iPhone version, 3.2 would be iPad, 3.3 would be iPhone, etc.
Oh, yeah. Go, like, stair-step it.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
That's
interesting.
Like Linux kernel builds, the odd-numbered versions are... I think it's this way around. The odd-numbered versions are unstable releases, and the even-numbered versions are stable releases.
Okay. So if that were true for iPhone, we're running the non-stable version.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
So, we were talking about the iBook. We are talking here about the old sense of the word iBook.
Right.
As in predecessor to MacBook.
Yes. And I really miss that name. I wish they hadn't gotten rid of the iBook, because it was so perfect. Yeah.
You know what it is? You know what it is? It's the consonants. There's two consonants next to each other. MacBook. MacBook. Whereas iBook. iBook.
Hmm.
Or PowerBook. PowerBook. You see?
Right.
That's what gets it. Is that pair of consonants, the C and the B.
Man, I hope they're not thinking that hard. Well, you know, it's Apple. They probably are thinking that hard about it.
Well, the name is one of the things that it's been controversial, to say the least.
Yeah. But then I heard somebody say, you know, that Nintendo's got a system out there called the Wii.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
It does pretty well by itself.
Yeah.
So I think this is just going to be, after all the giggles wear themselves out, you know, it's just going to be... I thought people thought iPod was weird when it first came out.
I thought it was weird, and it's kind of grown on me. I mean, the comment I made on my blog was... It would be a great name if the iPod wasn't called iPod.
Yes.
Yeah.
It'd be perfect. Well, I watched the keynote, and I listened to everything that Steve announced with the iPad, and I still stick to my original question, which is what do I need this for? I've got my iBook, and I've got my Apple Macintosh notebook.
This is for... I think the target market is for people who have an iMac and are looking for a good notebook. So they're going to go into the Apple store looking for a MacBook, and then they're just going to go in, and then they're going to see the iPad, maybe mm-hmm. play around with it for a while, and then they're going to get that instead.
Right. I bet you people who aren't even thinking about the iPhone maybe would spring for something like this. You know, they're happy with their phone carrier, they don't want... AT&T or, you know, whoever it is in the UK or other countries, okay. Maybe they aren't happy with them. But they still want one of these touch devices.
Yeah. Well, you said AT&T or whoever it is in the UK. Well, we actually have more than one carrier now.
Right, Orange
we've got O2, which is the original exclusive one, and then now it's on Orange and it's on other things as well. And so It's very good that now we've got choice, even if you don't. Sorry.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It's all right.
I mean, did you watch the keynote live?
No, not really. I listened to the MacBreak Weekly live coverage of it, and so I kind of heard a little bit of it in the background. And
Yeah,
I had Engadget going.
I was listening to that since about half an hour before the keynote started, and it was great. They had Merlin Mann on there, and he was making his usual witty remarks. And and then later on, so I came back to the computer, and I pulled up the Gadget photo live streaming, where somebody just takes a photo, you know, and it goes in a big live stream blog.
Right.
So I had the MacBreak stuff in the background, listening to that while watching the things scroll by. But then about halfway through the keynote, I switched back to the MacBreak tab just by accident from Twitter, and I noticed that I've actually got video streaming on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was me.
The commenting in the... I forget if it was in the podcast or just in the post keynote talk that they did before the podcast, because they streamed the MacBreak brutally live as well.
Mm-hmm.
That the guy who was streaming it, he was using his the camera built into his MacBook, the EyeSight.
I'll be darned.
And he had to hold it up, and at one point Steve just looked at him and he said, "I know you're live streaming me."
It's the video quality wasn't great, but you could kind of still see what was going on.
I mean, the quality of the picture for the photos was far better, so I just watched those.
Right.
And my dad was watching at the same time with me, and he said he wanted one.
Well, there you go. I still download the podcast version of the Apple keynote just so I can watch it later.
Right.
You know, full quality, full audio, all that.
I was going to do that, but I realized it would pretty much destroy the purpose of delaying this episode of the podcast from Thursday to Monday, which is so we don't get all our initial reality distortion fielded.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That was why I wanted to do it on Monday instead of the Thursday straight after.
Right.
Nope.
Let time take its take the magic dust off.
Yeah. Now what about Flash? This has been a huge point. I mean, it's been all over the internet. Jeffrey Zeldman just posted a blog post about it on his website. Daring Fireball has been covering it all week.
Great coverage. Yeah.
Did you notice that I linked to Mark Pilgrim's page on usesthis.com, and then like just now, John Gruber's like linked to it, and quoted the exact same portion, and made a pretty similar comment. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Maybe Mr. Gruber is reading Mr. Kindle. But Flash, I'm one of those guys that has Click2Flash, which is the Flash blocking plugin for Safari.
Works in other WebKit things as well. So it works in NetNewsWire, and I was trying OmniWeb the other day.
And it works in there too?
I think it's just whenever there's a WebKit view, it automatically works it.
Right. Well, if you have classic Macs and you use them to browse the internet like I do, I had my iMac G4 that I was using as my everyday Mac about a year ago, and I had to have Click2Flash installed because otherwise web pages would flash, would grind my iMac to a halt.
Yeah, same here, yeah.
So I just had to keep it running because Flash is such a resource hog that I had to disable it.
Right now I'm on Camino, which has that feature actually built into the browser.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So I
don't know, you've got this whole population of people that are purposely, on purpose, blocking Flash.
Yeah. And then they complain Apple is blocking Flash from the iPad.
Right. Although the speed of the iPad that people have been talking about, how it's super fast and it's super elegant, you know, it makes me wonder if the iPad could handle Flash just fine, but Apple is choosing to block it, you know, because of their political issues.
Yeah. Well, are there any political issues? I mean, I think Apple still owns part of Adobe, don't they?
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know about that. Well, it seems like they could get their way if they did. No, that this is spec. I have no idea. I've never heard that before.
I don't know either. I think it's true. Yeah.
But you know, Adobe makes a ton of money off of Mac users just because of the software that they run.
I mean, I'd be willing to bet that at least 50% of Adobe's Creative Suite users are Macs.
Right. So that makes me wonder, like, Adobe isn't making any money off of people viewing Flash. They only make money off people building Flash with, the software. And so to get a bunch of people using Flash, you need a bunch of people making Flash ads and websites and things like that, which I guess contributes to their bottom line. That's the only reason I can figure why they're so adamant about pushing Flash on people.
The tools to create Flash, you need that. That's the Flash Creator application is paid, isn't it? It's part of the Creative Suite.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, and it's not cheap.
No, nothing from that company ever is.
It's quality stuff.
So
yeah, I'm all for I just don't have any use for it. I mean, now that YouTube is transferring over to these open standards, that's all I use Flash for, really.
I mean, even like iTunes movies now come in H.264, and that's actually part of what I wanted to talk about. That maybe introducing the iPad maybe as a kind of a replacement for a laptop is kind of an excuse to kill the optical drive in it if you can get things through iTunes. Unlike the MacBook Air, where they're still trying to sell you the external drive, yeah.
Yeah, right. So because there's no optical drive on the iPad, you're thinking they want to move past that.
Yeah. But at the same time, an iPad cannot be your main computer, can it? Because you need to sync it with iTunes.
Right.
I'd love it if I could just have my iPad as a main computer.
Mm-hmm. So but, out of the box, you could just open it up and use it.
You open it up and use it, like the Newton.
Right.
But sadly, that's not the case. You need to sync it up.
Well, at least not yet. I mean, like I said, there's something coming down the pike that's gonna answer a lot of these questions. I bet you we'll see a day where you can open up an iPad and just use it just like that, and get all your updates and your software, you know, on Wi-Fi or 3G.
Yeah, but that's like saying that Apple had. You need one when you first got a Mac. You needed an Apple II to sync it with in 1984.
Mm-hmm. No, it's. Well, you're saying if you bought a Mac, what are you saying, David? I'm sorry.
I'm saying that when they introduced the Mac, it was a main computer. This was like the be all and end all of Apple's product line.
Right.
At least that's the way the future looked, because they didn't kill
when
kill the Apple II until like 1995 or whenever. But it looked like when the when it first came out that would be the future. But when you did get it, you didn't need to sync your Mac with an Apple II that you already had.
So when you buy an iPad, maybe someday you won't need to sync it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping that's the case. I'm hoping that they eventually kind of see sense and see that people might want to use this and not have a desktop or other type of computer.
Right. Because all the talk has been about, you know, this is going to be grandma's computer, this is going to be your parents' computer, where they buy it and they don't have to think about how it works, they just use it and it works. So if you buy one for somebody like that, you know, you need to sync it with something as it is right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's a shame because, I mean, if you are going to get it for grandma, then that's a problem, because it kind of removes one level of friendliness in a way, because you have to use a main computer, a less friendly main computer, to sync it.
Which is why I think, you know, we'll have an iPod some or iPad someday that you can just open up out of the box and you don't need to sync. I mean, if that's the goal.
Yeah. I mean, is Apple trying to kill the Mac at all? Kind of slowly but surely.
Right. I've thought of that, but then I also thought that when the iPhone was released, I thought, oh gosh, here's the future of the Apple, you know, Mac OS X. The iMac is, or the Macintosh is on its way out, but...
But that's kind of... You could understand that reaction, because it was kind of the first time that Apple had used the words OS X to refer to anything other than something on the Mac.
Right. But then I think that, you know, the Macintosh is such a big moneymaker for them that I don't know how they could get rid of it anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing a kind of a comparison to the Macintosh introduction in my Twitter, because it's kind of like, all right, we know that this is kind of expensive. It's more expensive than we wanted it to be. Do you think that's fair?
No, I don't think it's expensive at all. Are you talking about the iPad or the Macintosh?
The Macintosh.
Oh yeah, the Macintosh.
Yeah,
yes,
it was more expensive than they wanted it to be, but it's at the same time it's cheaper than what it succeeds, which is the Lisa, which is like a $10,000 computer.
Right.
And they've got in the keynote they advertised Pages and iWork as well as a drawing application. MacWrite. MacPaint.
You're thinking exactly what I've been thinking, that like the Macintosh was unleashed and it had all the basic get stuff done applications,
yeah.
Right? You had MacWrite, you had MacPaint, you had all the stuff that you could use to do some work and to get by. And it was only until the desktop publishing people, you know, lightning struck them and they thought, golly, what a great interface for making newsletters and flyers and things like that. And from there, the Macintosh just took off.
And then you got people writing a letter and putting 7 different fonts in 3 different colors.
Yes. And that's where the Macintosh really, you know, gathered steam. And I think something like that is going to happen with the iPod. Maybe it's out there already. Maybe we won't even know it when we see it, but lightning is going to strike, and it's going to take off from something that's not obvious to us now. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm just looking at the notes I made. Wait a minute.
So I think, you know, the iPad's greatness is in its potential. It has so much potential behind it that probably we're not even seeing it. We don't even know what it is yet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for real apps to get behind this. Like, I'd love a version of NetNewsWire for the iPad, especially if it did push notifications.
I saw on a music blog and design blog that I read pretty often, ISO 50 blog, that they were thinking about using something like this as like a piece of DJ equipment,
right.
Where instead of having all the sliders and spin tables and things like that, you could, you know, control it with this touch interface and you have your whole music set up on that thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, golly, people are already thinking of this thing ahead of time.
Right, yeah. My older brother is a DJ. I bet I'd love one of those to do that. And you know, music-wise, I was kind of surprised that they chose... Thinking about it in hindsight, I'm kind of surprised that they chose iWork as opposed to iLife to debut the iPad with.
surprised the heck out of me. Last week, I thought, you're crazy, putting spreadsheets and page layout stuff on the iPad.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, when the multi-touch iWork was rumored, I just assumed that it was a version of iWork that supported the multi-touch trackpad.
But maybe this means that the iLife stuff already on there, like the Photos application, is fancy enough to just be enough.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, you can't edit your photos with Photos application, can you?
Well, we don't know that. I mean, it might change.
Well, I don't think they'll have that before the release. I mean, after the announcement, but before the release. The only time they've even come close to do that was with the original iPhone, where they had the announcement, like, 10 days before they released it, that it was going to get better battery life than they expected.
Right. I bet you this time it's going to be different. I think they've got stuff that they're still working on, and when this thing hits in March, that there'll be some new things attached to it. If not then at least, like, when we get around to the new iPhone release in this summer, if we go according to the usual Apple schedule.
Yeah. I mean, thinking about the iPhone, what does the iPad bring to the iPhone table? Could we see anything from the iPad in the iPhone, do you think?
Well, let's... you know what? The first thing that caught me was the customizable backgrounds on the iPad. You know, you can put your picture there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what Apple is doing is... They're looking to what people, the jailbreak applications, and they're kind of making people do that legally within their rules, within their system, to try and deter them from jailbreaking their...
And it's such a no-brainer, and it's something so small. I mean, how hard is it really to have... I mean, you can change the wallpaper on your iPhone. Why can't you change the background? It seems something really simple. So I think that's a no-brainer.
I think they may have considered having customizable backgrounds on the iPhone originally, but maybe Jobs rejected it or something.
Yeah, he didn't want naked ladies on the background.
Yeah, exactly.
Or men, to our, you know, our other listeners.
So
that's something I think is easy. And maybe, well, you know, you've got Bento on the iPhone. I wonder if you can have some sort of iWork Lite or something like that. What do you think about that?
There's Bento on the iPhone?
Yes. Yes, there sure is.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Have you got it for your Bento setup that we were talking about last week?
No, I haven't sprung for the iPhone version just yet. I want to get used to the desktop version first.
Right. So, another thing that I think the next iPhone could take from the iPad is this new chip that they're putting in it, the A4.
Yes, sir.
It's really interesting what they've done, because they acquired the semiconductor company a while ago. What was it? Palo Alto? PA Semi, yeah.
Yep.
And I think that's probably come from them.
Boy, they put that to good use, didn't they?
Yeah. And part of what makes it so fast, I think, is that processor. It's not just that it's well coded, well written. I think it's that the processor inside it that's making it so fast.
Oh, definitely. Because it's and they've tied everything together so that it works, you know, perfectly, I'm sure.
Yeah, they somebody I forget which news site it was. They did a thing where an article they had where they talked about that it was an ARM CPU, an ARM CPU, like the one in the iPhone, but with an integrated GPU, graphics processor.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah.
You know, David, we should have like a show notes section for our listeners, right? So they can...
We should, so yeah.
They don't just have to take our word for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was messing around with AAC, seeing if we could use that instead of MP3 for our encoding, and one of the things you can do with that is have lyrics which appear on the iPhone in a kind of, I don't know if you've ever seen them, kind of the background grays out and you see them. So I was thinking we could put them there, so people could see them while they were listening on their iPhones or iPod Touches.
Yeah. So there, for you, the listener, we're going to just prove that we're not full of crap when we talk about this stuff.
Okay, absolutely.
Yes.
And we can...
It's all about authenticity.
Perhaps we could put that on the website as well.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, this chip, I think it needs to appear on the iPhone, because I look at my iPhone, and I have a 3G, and it frustrates me sometimes at how slow it is, even in some applications.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's talking about how fast the iPad is. I mean, Stephen Fry talked about it in his post. Mm-hmm. Somebody else said that... So he was walking out of the area where they were testing them with his friend, and his friend was using his iPhone. He was going, "Oh, it's so slow!" Just because the iPad seemed so fast in comparison.
Right, I think it's going to spoil people, and that we'll need to have a fast phone. And if they can do it with this chip, you know, there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
But then it makes you wonder if they're going to do more things with this chip company that they bought.
Yeah, when
someday going to appear in the Macs.
When I heard that it was a different chip that they designed themselves, the A4 chip, I was kind of hoping that it would be a PowerPC one that they'd put in there, but sadly, not the case.
Yeah, I thought it was cool, the naming. It reminded me of the old PowerPC, the naming conventions.
Yeah, maybe we'll see... an iPad. Maybe we'll see ourselves calling it the iPad A5 or A6 as the chips evolve, maybe.
Well, you know, back in the day when you talked about Macs, you knew what people were talking about. I have an iBook G3, he's got an iMac G5. You know, you knew what they were talking about. Now, when I say I've got an iMac,
that's
like, I don't have anything else to say.
I mean, iBook G3 is probably a bad example there, because they did it in two different versions, the clamshell and the white snow.
That's true. But now you don't have anything, except I think the only thing I can go with now is like my screen size.
Yeah.
But, you know, when they update the iMac, then what do you call it?
Yeah. I mean, in Mac Tracker and all the other tracking websites that have all the Mac models, they're actually using when they were released. So, like, the... Yeah.
Like late 2009 model.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that sucks.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. I want an iMac A6.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we'll see that in the future, the switch to the A4 architecture in the Mac. I doubt it, but...
Well, I thought about that earlier today, how they made the processor switch about once a decade. Like, in the early 90s, it was 68K to PowerPC, and then the mid-last decade, it was PowerPC to Intel. So I don't think you can do it too often, because you're gonna make a lot of people mad. Hey, David, I hear we have a sponsor this week.
Yeah, we do. Our first ever sponsor of the show...
Who in the world is crazy enough to sponsor this Hello show?
It's a guy called Martin Hare, and he makes an app called Amadeus Pro. It's an audio editing app. It's a really great app. I'm using it right now to record this podcast. Later on, I'll be editing the podcast with it. It's available from haresoft.com. It's a very nice application. The interface is very simple. Like, if Apple had made their own audio editing app instead of buying Logic, then this would be what it was like. This is amazing. It's an incredibly simple interface, yet it does just about everything. I mean, one of the advertised features is that it makes it super easy to, if you've got like a records, vinyl records or tape cassettes, then you can just plug your tape cassette, I think this is how it works, you plug your tape cassette into the microphone slot on your Mac, and then it can just record it from it, And then there's all sorts of tools you can use on it to make it a better quality. There's a denoiser. It's a really nice application. And the best one of the things very about nice. It is that although we are advertising Amadeus Pro, there is an older version which is still on support called Amadeus 2, which runs on any version of Mac OS 10 up to 10.5, and it runs on Mac OS 9 as well.
I'll be darned. So those classic...
And there's an even older version of it that's not on support that runs on 8.6.
Wow.
So it's kind of a good thing for us with us talking about old stuff and new stuff that it works across all these different versions of the operating system.
That's great. So I can install it on my Power Mac G3, my iMac G3, my iBook G4, every Mac I've got, this thing will come on.
Every Mac you've got. In fact, if you hunt around on the internet, I'm not sure if Martin will appreciate us saying this, but I'm pretty sure if you hunt around the internet, you can find the original Amadeus, not Amadeus 2 or Amadeus Pro, the original Amadeus, which runs on 68Ks. So you can even run it, might even be able to run it on your Mac SEs.
I'll be darned. So they've been with the Mac community for a while then, that's what you're saying. Yeah, well, we sure appreciate their support. And what website can you find them at?
Herasoft.com. There'll be a link on our website, helloshow.net, where you can just click on a version of the icon of the app, and it'll just take you straight there.
Great, and we sure appreciate their support.
Absolutely, yes.
It's making this fine, stupendous podcast right here.
Yep.
Great. Anything else about the iPad, David?
The applications with the being able to run iPhone apps scaled up.
This is genius.
It is genius. It's. I think it's one of the things that only Apple would really do.
Right.
To think about their customers who might be switching over, have all this huge library of apps.
It really gives you a reason to buy one, because if you have an iPhone and you have all these apps, you don't want to rebuy the ones you've got, and you don't want to wait for the developers to make the new ones.
Yeah. I quipped in my Twitter stream, though, that all Apple seemed to be doing was, in terms of helping developers with this new, with the new platform, is giving developers a new way to create even better fart noises.
Well, there's money to be made in those, and so I think developers don't mind. Now, what I wonder about is if they're going to take care of some of the App Store issues, like approval and denying and things like that.
I seriously hope so. That is, if they don't do that, then I'm just not going to get one.
Right.
I'll get the iBook instead.
Now, this doesn't affect my life at all. I mean, it's not like I'm sitting with bated breath waiting for applications. But I always think about the developer. You always want the App Store to be a nice place to make an app. And you don't want people to get angry and leave the place in droves.
No. It's kind of a compromise you have to make.
Right. Well, it's a gamble. I mean, either you're going to sit there for 6 months and wait for your app to be approved, or you're going to get your fart noise app approved, and then you make $1 million.
Absolutely, yeah. They were banning things for stupid reasons back before they introduced this new age rating system. And
right.
I think they still do ban things for stupid reasons. Like, do you remember when the iPhone user super guide from Macworld, that was banned because it had the word iPhone in it?
Right.
Infringement on Apple's trademark.
Yeah. God forbid people try to help people out at Macworld.
Yeah. I mean, don't Apple have some affiliation with Macworld, I'm sure?
Well, they used to, at least.
I'm sure they did, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm still waiting for my Newton emulation app.
I think you might be waiting a while, Dave.
Well, maybe. But I'm sure
you'll probably have to jailbreak it to get it on, to give you a clue.
You know, if somebody made a jailbreak Newton app, I would probably jailbreak my iPhone just to try it out. And how great would it be for the iPad to have a Newton emulation app? Because then you'd have, you know, this giant touchscreen device that you can scribble on.
Well, it would all be scaled up.
And it recognizes your handwriting.
It would all be scaled up, so it'd look rubbish.
No, but I'm saying make a special iPad version.
Unless they can come up with some kind of hack that makes it full screen.
Right. No, I think that'd be a lot of fun. Just for old time's sake.
Yeah. So, what about the books? The iBooks and the iBook Store. As in the new type, the ebook type iBooks.
I think people have been waiting this for a while. It's like Apple was just kind of sitting on its thumbs, letting everybody else figure out the ebook market, and then it jumps in with its own model, which is interesting. I don't know much about the ebook format that they're using, but I hope you have the ability to use like the open source versions, like the Gutenberg project.
I'm hoping that's the case, but I doubt it will be.
Knowing Apple, I bet you're right.
Yeah, because I think Apple sees books like it sees music. It's a thing that some of it is free because it was made a long time ago. But the stuff they're really interested in is the stuff they can charge for. Right. Like people, and then there's this people can't submit the songs they made in GarageBand to iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's an interesting question. Is it going to be DRM'd? I mean, they opened up iTunes. Are they going to lock these books down with some sort of, you know?
Almost certainly, initially. I think we're having gone through this long struggle with music to get rid of DRM, we're now going to have to go through the same struggle with books.
Well, that's too bad.
It is.
So I can't throw my Newton ebooks up on the iPad.
No.
Hey, will we have an iBook application for the iPhone?
Well, funny you should mention that. The iBook interface, that little shelf thing, looked remarkably similar to an application I've got. Classics. Have you heard about this story with it being suspiciously similar?
Yeah. Well, it even looks to me like Delicious Library. But I mean, how many ways can you do a bookshelf with books on it?
Well, yeah, I suppose. But I mean, I have Classics. I got it pretty much as soon as it came out. I was like the first time the discount was still on because it was a new app, so I downloaded it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things with this Classics application is it's a preset library of books, a preset library of public domain books. It's got like Alice in Wonderland, Robinson Crusoe,
right,
A Christmas Carol, and Homer, The Art of War, all sorts of this stuff. But you can't add your own books.
Oh, interesting. Now, see, I have Stanza. And I love Stanza because
yeah,
you can download a whole bunch of ebooks on there.
Yeah, they have got a store there, haven't they? Well, they had the last time I looked.
Yeah, and I haven't tried out the Kindle application, but I've been pretty happy with Stanza.
I don't think we can get that over here. We couldn't, the Kindle application.
Oh, really?
Well, the Kindle is not available over here anyway, I don't think.
Yeah. But, you know, I read good old-fashioned books, the paper kind anyway, so
yeah.
I'm not a big e-book reader.
Yeah. We should do an episode one time about books.
Yeah,
it's
we
like
can
when
do that.
There's no news, just talk about books.
Yeah. And I don't think I would be a big book reader on the iPad because I don't need to turn a book on, and it doesn't take any power to run it. You know, I can just curl up with it and it doesn't get warm in my hands.
Well, one of the things that people said when they were trying out the iPad was that it didn't get warm in your hands. And that the screen brightness was It was really nice. It wasn't too bright, like on. It's not as bright as the iPhone, but not so dark that you couldn't see anything. Like a really nice brightness.
Right.
So,
I'm sure that'll be adjustable. They can't just set one.
Yeah. Another interesting thing about the iBooks is that you can change the font. So now everybody can read War and Peace in Comic Sans.
And those people, well, I won't say what I was going to say. They probably don't know how to read.
No.
That's too bad. I just hope to goodness they don't have papyrus on there.
That would be frustrating.
Now, David, do you have a problem with papyrus in the UK? I mean, is it rampant like it is here in the US?
Is it rampant in there? Over there?
Like, everyone from real estate agents to salons to... I've even seen it with, like, politicians and charity events and things like that. Everybody wants to look like an ancient Egyptian scroll. And it is so... I've seen it on building signage. It's awful. It's awful.
We kind of have the same problem over here with Arial.
Oh, yeah. Arial's everywhere.
Arial is everywhere, yeah.
And that's a virus unleashed in the world by Microsoft, of course, because they didn't want to pay for Helvetica.
The story, I think, is kind of complicated, but basically, yes.
It's their version of Helvetica.
I think they... Alright, so, tangent here. The story of Helvetica and Arial. So, 1957, this guy in London somewhere comes out with this really nice font, Helvetica. It's basically the idea is that of a font that doesn't have any hidden meaning in its shapes. That was the basic idea, and it's become one of the most. Since then, it's become one of the most popular fonts in the world, and it really is just beautiful. Many people have thought so.
Very utilitarian.
Yes. So then. The foundry who made Helvetica was Linotype, the Linotype font foundry, and they. But then, when PostScript was invented by Adobe, they had a certain set of fonts, which the specification for PostScript required that all systems that interpreted PostScript could read. So, like, it was built in; it didn't need to be included as a font in the PostScript file.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Apple initially did not support PostScript on the Mac. It was only when the LaserWriter printer came out, which used a PostScript interface internally, that they actually added Helvetica. Before that, they used a font designed by Susan Kerr called Geneva, which was pretty similar. It's obviously cut from the same cloth. Pretty similar, but clearly not a direct rip-off. Like, the spacing was different, quite a lot of it was varied, and it remained the typeface used for icon labels in the Mac OS right through until Mac OS 9. But then, when Microsoft released Windows, they created a bitmap version of Helvetica, which, of course, because Windows didn't have long file names then, was called Helv, H-E-L-V. And Linotype, understandably, weren't too happy about that. So, I think in Windows 3.1, Helv was rechristened Microsoft Sans Serif, and Microsoft commissioned Monotype to create a font that had the same spacing, the same dimensions as Helvetica, but wasn't exactly the same. So it was kind of like basically asking Monotype to produce them a ripoff of Helvetica.
Mm-hmm.
So Monotype modified a font of theirs, I forget which one, but they modified a font of theirs, to have the same spacing, and they changed some of the thicknesses so it didn't look quite the same. And that became Arial in Windows. Now, while Apple carried on bundling Helvetica in the Mac, Microsoft started bundling Arial as a replacement for it. So, basically there was, I think there was actually a lawsuit about it, that it was, Arial was a rip-off. But, basically the story is that Microsoft uses Arial as the system font, whereas Apple uses Helvetica.
Right.
So anyway, that was quite a long tangent. I might edit that and put it in another episode where we're kind of running a bit short.
Well, and now Arial has taken over the world because, you know, you ask any American what one of their favorite fonts is, and it's one of them's going to be Arial.
Yeah. Sad. But that's the way it is.
Yes, sir.
But the interesting thing is that Microsoft actually uses Helvetica in its marketing.
Yes.
Yeah. So very strange.
Well, gosh, is there anything else we can talk about? I did get a hands on an LC520.
I saw your Flickr post about it.
Yes, sir. My good friend Curtis, who owns his own Mac museum in his basement, he had a school contact him in the area, and they still had working LC520s in their school for all these years. And they only recently shut them down, and they were looking for a place to put them, and there were six of them. And so they called up my friend Curtis and asked him if he wanted them. And he can't say no to any Apple products, so he went over and grabbed them, and he said, Dave, you know, if you want to play around with one, here you go. So we went, and we fired up a bunch of them, and it's probably going to be my Newton Mac. I'm going to do some Newton stuff on there.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, it's on my Flickr account if anybody wants to check it out. My username is DaveLawrence8.
DaveLawrence8.
So good fun. I can't wait to dive into it.
Yeah.
System 7.6.
7.6, yeah. That was the last one before... Or was
system
it the say... Is that is System 7.6, they changed the name to Mac OS?
Yes.
Was it before that?
Yep, that was the first one.
Yeah, because they had the cloning thing going on, so they wanted to identify it with the Mac.
And it was kind of the gateway between System 7 and System 8. It kind of introduced some things that System 8 had. So I'm very excited. I can't wait to dive into it.
All right. So do you have one of those now?
Yes.
Oh,
yep.
Right.
I've got it sitting here at home.
Right. Is that... What point did they switch the LC... Did they ever switch the LC line to the power PC?
Yeah, I think it was... It was later on in the LC, and you'll have to... I mean, I don't want to quote anything on this, but...
Okay.
But I believe so. And this was one of the all-in-one models, so it's got the built-in monitor, it's got the hard drive in there. And
right.
And Curtis had them in his airplane hangar, and here in Michigan lately, it's been freezing cold. It's been absolutely horrible. And what happened was all the LC hard drives kind of froze up, and we couldn't get them running at first until we warmed his airplane hanger up. And finally, we got one to kick on, and now it works perfectly.
Right. I can't believe that... How on earth did they use these computers for so long? I mean, they must have had some compatibility issues at the school.
Right. Well, it had some education software on there that they still used. It was some language software, you know, teach Spanish,
right.
That kind of thing. So it looks like the first Power Mac LC was the 52,000, the 5200 model.
Yeah, if I remember rightly, it was the way you could tell a Power PC Mac from a 68K one was that the 68K had a 3-digit model number,
mm-hmm.
but the Power PC had a 4-digit. I think.
Right. Well, you just add a 0 to my LC, and that's.
I think that's how they worked it.
PC was. Yeah, well, that's a good way to tell.
That might not be true. I'm not sure, but.
But yeah, I'll have lots of screenshots, and I'll post something to Newton Poetry once I have some time to play around with it. So I'm pretty excited.
So I think we should talk about some stuff that's happened on the internet this week. I mean, the main thing's been the iPad.
Okay.
But, did you catch Dan Benjamin's new show, The Conversation? It was live.
You know, I just downloaded it, and after I'm done with our podcast here, I'm going to go to the gym and listen to it.
Oh, okay. Well, I listened to it live.
Dan's a great podcaster. He does a great job. And I'm excited that this is going to be his new gig. Like, his new...
He's doing it full-time.
Yeah, his new network.
Yeah, 5x5.
Yep. So, good stuff. I just wish...
It's kind of a bummer that iTunes is flaked out on him this week.
Yeah.
With submitting the...
Well, it's kind of flaked out on all of us, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, I must apologize to our listeners who wanted to search through iTunes that we were not in there. iTunes seems to be having some technical difficulties with submission at the moment. So right now the link for listening iTunes on our website is actually just a link using the ITPC thing where you just stick ITCP:// in front of an RSS feed URL instead of HTTP, and it just opens iTunes.
Hmm. Well, I'm sure Apple has their best people working on it, or at least
I filed a bug report about it. So
look at you being proactive.
Yep.
Proactive complaining. That's what we should call that.
Well, I'm come from a strong Unix and open source tradition, so I'm kind of like, it's kind of my, I kind of feel it right to file bugs when I find things like that.
Right. Well, good for you, because I didn't, so you did it for both of us.
Right. So I think we're wrapping up there.
Yeah, I think these are exciting times to be living in. We weren't very conscious of the Macintosh when it was first released, but here we've seen the iPhone and now the iPad. I think exciting times are coming.
Yeah, and I think we have something to talk about for the next show. We have a very special guest coming on.
Yes, should we announce it?
No, I'd rather keep it a secret. Maybe that kind of surprise.
But we will give a hint. We'll say this guy knows his Newton.
He certainly does. He's a well-known Newton user.
Yes. So thanks again to our sponsor this week, Amadeus Pro, who is helping craft this wonderful podcast.
Yes. Thanks to them.
We appreciate their support.
Yes.
So I guess we'll talk next week, David.
Yep. Okay. So hopefully I can get this episode out pretty quick.
Just not on iTunes till they get it fixed.
Not on iTunes till they get it fixed. So, thank you very much for listening.
And this is the Hello Show.
Yep.
Saying goodbye.
Tune in next time.